points. I have another story, like from one of my coworkers, believed in certain things. I was like, you can, I worked for the medical center, like, you could literally go and talk to the researchers that are working on this. They're actually doing it. They're just right down the hallway. You could talk to them instead of getting your information from online. You could talk to real people until someone's crafted, crafted just propaganda to make your mind go either way. So talk to people in real life. That's my big, big thing. So last part, Hitler sent, part two is talking about, his us versus them mentality. So this is going to be the last part. It's 10 o'clock. This one is like 7 minutes long. I'm going to let this play out. I think that's going to be the end of the show after this. I'll talk about it a little bit afterwards. So my diatribe's done for the day, my big one. So 656-4399, you have questions, comments, you can email me at radiolyceum@protonmail.com. That's RADIOLYCEUM, all one word, @protonmail.com if you have any questions, comments, or non-toxic cults that you would like people to be joined of. There's tons of them out there. Volunteer groups, Habitat for Humanity, Rotary Club. I'll be talking to a bunch of them later on in my show once I get through my main push of different things. So anyway, I'm going on and on. Let's get into this last part. Radio Lyceum.
In his speech, Hitler used vulgar comparisons tailor-made to the intellectual capacities of his listeners, and he did not shy away from even the cheapest allusions. His words and opinions were simply hurled out with dictatorial certainty, as if they were unquestionable principles and facts. All this manifests itself in his language as well, which is like something merely expulsed. At Hitler's second appearance in Circus Krona in late March, however, the hall was only two-thirds full. In early April, around 3,000 people showed up, and on 6 April, Hitler was only drawing half that number. Hitler, back in front of empty seats, the Social Democratic Münchener Post newspaper gleefully reported. After his involuntary 2-year hiatus, Hitler no longer possessed the appeal as a speaker he once had. That had less to do with fatigue, even among his Munich followers, than with his refusal to take account of all the recent changes in his speeches, which still relied upon the crisis rhetoric of 1923. Hitler stodgily ignored all signs of economic recovery. The German collapse continues, he asserted in December 1925, declaring a few months later, "Today we are a pitiable people, plagued by misery and poverty. 7 years on from 1918, we can say that we have sunk lower and lower." Hitler liked to use comparisons with Italy under Mussolini to portray conditions in Germany in the worst possible light. There they have a flourishing economy, while here we have a decrepit industrial sector with 12 million unemployed, he declared at a rally in Stuttgart in April 1926. In reality, an average of only 2 million Germans were unemployed that year. Hitler paired his extreme exaggeration of Germany's economic plight with extremist polemics against Gustav Stresemann's policy of international reconciliation. For Hitler, the 1924 Dawes Plan was nothing but a grandiose way of sapping the German people's energy. The 1925 Treaty of Locarno represented boundless subordination and the deepest dishonor. As he had previously with Walter Rathenau, Hitler did not shy away from ad hominem attacks on Stresemann, accusing him of being a traitor. For Hitler, reaching any agreements with Germany's irreconcilable enemy, France, was like trying to form a coalition between the goose and the fox. The German foreign minister owed his office to the grace of France, Hitler sneered, and thus was more concerned about the interests of his French colleague, Aristide Briand, than those of the German people. Hitler took the same view that conservatives in general did of Weimar culture, seeing it only as a symptom of decadence and decline. In Hitler's mind, German literature and art had been made obscene and dirty. Even in the birthplace of German classicism itself, Weimar, Hitler raged in one of his speeches, "The poisoners of the German soul are leading their filthy existence and defiling the sites of the most elevated art with nigger and jazz music. One task of National Socialism was to clean out this manure." Hitler blamed the degeneration of German culture on the corrosive influence of Jews. Not only did Jews control the economy via the banks and the stock exchanges, Hitler thundered in August 1925, they also dominated German journalism, literature, art, theater, and cinema. Today they are in almost complete control culturally, just as they are in total control economically over the entire world. Incarceration had done nothing to dampen Hitler's fanatic anti-Semitism, which he put on display not only at closed party meetings, but in public mass events. No other speaker in the NSDAP, not even Goebbels or Julius Streicher, raged more furiously against the Galician riffraff and criminal gangs, the international Jewish stranglers of blood, and the drones of international high finance. The people of the world, he promised in June 1927, would breathe easier once they were liberated from the Jews. On 24 February 1928, the 8th anniversary of the announcement of the party program, Hitler may have proclaimed, "If the Jew behaves, he can stay. If not, out with him." But in the same breath, he insisted that we are the masters of our house, and issued an unmistakably murderous threat. One cannot compete with parasites. One can only remove them. Hitler could, of course, moderate his anti-Semitism when he was speaking before smaller, select audiences. One example is the speech he gave on 28 February 1926 in front of an exclusive conservative nationalist club in Hamburg, in the great hall of the luxury Atlantic Hotel. Here, Hitler's talk avoided any mention of the Jewish question, focusing instead on the danger of the Marxist movement. His understanding of the term Marxist was very broad, however, and included both the Social Democrats and the Communists. But because the moderate Hamburg SPD, which cooperated with bourgeois liberals, was not a suitable target for attack, Hitler concentrated his bile on the KPD, whose leader, Ernst Thälmann, came from the northern German port city. Hitler deliberately called upon the fears of his audience, which included leading Hamburg merchants, of the communists coming to power. If communism were to triumph today, 2 million people would be making their way to the gallows, he prophesied. But there was a way of smashing and eradicating the Marxist worldview, which was the aim of his own movement. The NSDAP, Hitler proclaimed, knew that toxins could only be combated with antitoxins, and the party would not rest until the last Marxist has either been converted or eliminated. The initially reserved audience greeted these words with frenetic applause, and at the end of the speech, when Hitler proclaimed his vision of a Germany of freedom and power, he was showered with ovations and shouts of Heil. For Hitler, the categories Jewish and Marxist were interchangeable. Depending on the situation, his warnings for the future could oscillate between the international Jewish world enemy and the international Marxist poisoning of peoples. On occasion, he would combine the two objects of hatred. The Jew is and remains the world's enemy, and his greatest weapon, Marxism, is and remains a plague for humanity, he wrote in February 1927 in the Völkischer Beobachter. By destroying Marxism, Hitler believed that he could eradicate class conflict and create a genuine ethnic popular community.
So, that's the last clip I have for this week, Radio Lyceum. So, this is the last thing I put in. I pulled out two random clips. One that kind of talked about us versus them and some psychological manipulation. So I didn't read the entire book, but just those two clips, you're like, eh. You can definitely see parallels and definitely certain strands of thought that are happening in the world. So this is the last of the cults, cults versus fascism. Kind of want to bring in some of the parallels between the two of them. Because a lot of it's like finger pointing between either way. You could have people on the right be like, all those sheeple are all just Marxist leftists. That reduces what people are thinking into a non-reducible idea, something that's not, you can't argue against. Reductive thinking, which is 100% cult type thinking and authoritarianism. So it goes both ways. I think it's just to ignore the window fronting, pay attention to what's in the background, how they treat their people, how they do their messages and such. So, and it's interesting when my plan was just to do cults this week, because for me, I was like, I thought it'd be responsible since I'm saying, like, hey, you should go out and join a community, be like, put out some of the negative things. And I'm going through the reading some of the books about cults, and I'm like, holy, this is just pretty much fascism. A lot of these negative things. So they tie in closely together. I thought that was a fascinating tie-in. So hopefully you did enjoy it, even though last clip is very scary indeed. After last week, I was like, don't get sucked into the negativity. They could put you in a bad space. Be aware of the negativity. And join a community that can come up with solutions for these things. So, and that's my final pitch. Go out, hang out in a bar, go hang out with a club somewhere, go join a club. You got the university, join a study group. If you want to improve your studies, it's scientifically proven. In a group studying, it's going to help you become a better student. So, a lesson I could learn when I was a student here. So, yeah. So in many different ways, that's my final message. And later on, we'll be talking about some of these groups that we think are positive. Later on, I might be making a list and coming together. If anyone wants help with that or want to send it to Radio Lyceum at protonmail.com, we can discuss these things and figure out people can be more active in the community. I also wanted to talk about... one more time, there is a showing of Join and Die film screening. I found out about Robert Putman like late in my process of coming up before this radio show, like later this fall. I was looking at Join and Die, and I was like, huh, this is pretty much the thing that I'm talking about. So it's definitely in the zeitgeist. So there's going to be a film screening for Join and Die on... the February 26th, which is Wednesday, from 1 to 3:30 p.m. here at the university. They don't say exactly where it is, but you go to, if you look up UVM Join or Die online, it should tell you where you need to go, where this is. So let's play one final track, and we're going to call it a night. So Radio Lyceum, this is James. You're listening to WRUV FM Burlington. See you guys next week. Final track is by Steel Eye Span, The Lowlands of Holland.
But the lowlands of Holland.
Stewart Span, Lowland of Holland. I love that the Irish deep brooding husband dying in the ocean. That's a little too depressing at the end of my show. So I'm going to play one more track. We're going to play something from my favorite, 10,000 times favorite traditional Irish folk band, Planxty. This is a little more uplifting. Raggle